Welcome to this Public Health England podcast on domestic violence. Public Health England have created this series of podcasts to raise awareness of the different aspects of domestic violence and its importance as a public health issue. Each podcast speaker has been asked to talk from their perspective about the issue. We hope this provides a real reflection on the topics and issues and inspires you to find out more.
My name's Phil Price. I work for an organisation called the Domestic Violence Intervention Project. I'm here to talk about working with perpetrators of domestic violence, how we deliver the programmes, why we deliver the programmes, and some of the things you need to consider when coming across domestic violence perpetrators. We work with a range of referral sources, men referred via the family court when they're applying for contact with the children, where there's been established allegations of domestic violence. Men referred via children's services, again where domestic violence has been noted as a concern when child protection concerns are raised, and self-referred men who are realising that they don't want to act in the way that they've been acting in their relationships. Before I go on to talk about programmes in detail, I just wanted to make a brief point about community-based perpetrator programmes. I think in any London borough there are roughly 2,000 to 2,500 police call-outs per year. And the research really clearly indicates that there is between 25 and 35 incidences of domestic violence before the police are first contacted. This whole process results in maybe per borough 5 or 10 criminal justice programme places. So there's a tremendous need for perpetrator programmes outside of the criminal justice system, and there is a tremendous amount of domestic violence going on behind closed doors that's never addressed or never comes to the notice of services. That's why DVIP runs the programmes that it does. DVIP programmes run for 26 weeks. We work around the idea of a power and control wheel, which I'm sure most of you will have seen. But just to say briefly, this wheel sections out domestic violence into a range of different behaviours, which includes emotional abuse, name-calling, put-downs, psychological abuse, threats, sexual pressuring, how children get drawn in, blocking our anger, financial abuse, all sorts of things like that. And what we're saying to the men is that it's not just that you shout and that you threaten or that you storm out or that you slam the door or that you sulk. It's just that every time you use one of these behaviours, it carries with it the reality and threat of her previously experienced violence. As a really good example in terms of establishing the power and control aspect of domestic violence, quite often in an early group I'll ask for a show of hands. How many of you in this room have grabbed your partner by her throat? And out of a group of 10 or 12, usually half or slightly more will put their hands up. I'll ask someone, okay, so you grabbed her by your throat, just if you could scale it for me on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being as hard as you could possibly be grabbing someone, how would you scale it? Mostly they will come back with a 3 or a 4 or a 5. So what we're able to say at this point is that at your worst, at your most raging, humiliated and furious with her, you are still able to set a limit to your behaviour. And if you can set a limit there at a 5 or a 6, you can set a limit a long way before there. You can set a limit for yourself about not escalating arguments, about not blocking her anger, about not trivialising her concerns. It's really clear, even at his worst, he's still thinking, he's still making choices, and he's still setting limits to his behaviour. Just to add, and of crucial importance, is to talk about the integrated victim support services that we run alongside programmes. This is important because programmes can be manipulated, or they can be misunderstood, or they can be misrepresented by perpetrators attending. So it's important that we're able to gain the details of the people at risk from this violence and explain what we do, explain how we do it, explain why we do it in the way that we do it, and check out with her, how is she feeling? It's really important to be able to say, we've been delivering this work for a long, long time, and he may well be coming to the programme, he may well seem to us like he's making changes, but really the only person that can judge that is you. The Women's Services is about managing risk, but it's also massively about promoting her safety and about exploring her needs and her journey and helping her to reach the safest possible outcome from however it is she enters into the project. I think some of our best work is actually where we enable couples to separate safely. in the sense that we bring him into a program, we're able to reduce his dangerousness, help him to become more responsible for his behavior, while supporting her to become more confident and you know, prioritize her own emotional needs and make the safest choices for herself. I'll talk quickly about how the program works and why it works in the way that it does beyond the power and control message, which of course is crucial. I guess the early bits of the program are about helping him understand his build-up towards the violence and abuse. Men will come into the program saying, you know, I was just furious. She does this, she does that. I feel furious, I feel upset, I feel scared. And what we're saying early on is, let's turn that around. Let's look at what you do and how she might feel. And that leads into us trying to build empathy for, you know, empathy for the victims of his behaviour, empathy for the children, empathy for her. Another really important component of the early part of the programme is helping him to recognise the impact on the people around him. So in some ways that's easiest to sort of build up from asking him how it affects him. So how do you feel about your violence? How do you feel after the row? And he'll talk about feeling guilty and ashamed and out of control. And from there we're able to say, how do you imagine your children feel? What do you think it feels like for them to be upstairs when all that noise and all that hurt is going on downstairs? And from there, the hardest question for him to focus on, I think, is how his partner feels. Has she ever felt frightened? What do you imagine it's like to feel frightened of? How do you imagine it feels for her? What do you think it feels like to see you shouting and screaming and bawling, kicking stuff, grabbing her, punching her, shoving her to the floor? From there as well, it's important, I think, to recognise that these aren't easy issues for people coming into programmes to try and address. So we will work with him around, you know, his own narrative, his own story. How did he end up here? You know, what are his own experiences of powerlessness in his life? What was it like for him to be frightened as a child? We do that work because we want to support the men. We want to support the men in making their changes. But we also do that work because helping him to understand himself is going to enable him to understand his partner. A colleague of mine talks about the notion of skeptical empathy. So we are empathic with the guys. We do support the changes that they're trying to make. But we can be skeptical as well. We can, you know, having worked with a women's service for so long, I learned very early on that, you know, it's very difficult to judge the guys that are making changes from how they present in group. So, he may be lying. Or it may be that he just hasn't given thought to what it's like to be his partner. I just want to make a couple of more points, about the reason for this podcast and about the sort of cost to public health in terms of domestic violence. We know, I think, elsewhere on these different podcasts, we know the massive cost to society of domestic violence, up towards $23 billion, according to Professor Wolby, etc. I want to say a couple of things about outcomes before I finish. I work at DVIP full time. We're running 11 programs across London at the moment, and we average an engagement rate of about 80% with the partners and ex-partners of men attending. So I hear day in and day out that these programs are working, that partners of men attending are feeling safer, that they consider their children safer, and that the men are changing their behaviour. You know, that it's not just enough to talk about my experience, and there's a whole range of outcome studies that indicate very strongly that programs work. So DVIP have had two evaluations, both of which say really clearly that 70% of men completing the programs end their violence, which is a fantastic outcome over an 8 or 9 month program. But what I should add about that as well is that 30% of the men completing don't end their violence, which is why it's crucial to always provide support and risk management with partners and ex-partners of men that you're referring in. And I just wanted to add a couple of other points. Like I said at the beginning, there are probably 2,000 or 2,500 police call-outs in your London borough. these men aren't getting picked up. Where are they going? Where are they going to get support? Where are they going when things are going wrong? And our feeling is they're probably presenting at GPs. They're coming in and saying things like, oh, I've got a headache. I've been under a lot of stress recently. I've been suffering from depression. My wife says I've got an anger management problem. My wife's angry about my drinking. So if you see any of those indicators, and there are really good toolkits out there, you know, Ava's toolkit for the Stella Project has a fantastic range of screening questions, then at least consider the potential that this man is actually using violence and abuse in your relationship. You know, like I said, we're working with over 600 referrals a year, but across London, that just means 200 men are being referred in without statutory involvement. And as we know from the massive amount of domestic violence that's being notified to the police, most of those cases aren't getting statutory involvement. And we think they should be held to account. We think they should be attending programs. We think they should be taking responsibility for the behaviour. The responsibility for the risk in domestic violence sits with the people using the violence. As a final point, I just want to state clearly, a couple of things that we believe very strongly in the sector, and that is anger management or couples counselling aren't appropriate responses to intimate partner violence. Just to say briefly why, couples counselling seems to communicate the idea that these issues are co-created in some way. That somehow his behaviour is, the responsibility for his behaviour is partly shared. We feel very strongly that isn't the case, and we know working on the programmes that is absolutely the way to work with these issues. Also, I think couples counselling communicates an idea of safety or an independent witness. Yet what happens after the session? So if she really says how she feels about how he behaves, what's going to happen to her after the session? And we don't think there's enough safety in place for couples counselling to work, especially while the violence is ongoing. Equally, anger management seems to communicate the idea that this is solely about his anger. This is about him losing his temper, making a mistake, and that's all he has to worry about. And as I said about the power and control wheel, I don't think that's true. Anger's something that he'll know very well. Anger is the issue that he's socialised into, and actually what he needs to learn to do is think about himself, think about how he's responding, how he takes responsibility for his behaviour, how he's blaming her, how he's frightened her in the past, the lens through which he sees his relationships, the lens through which he sees masculinity, and the lens through which he sees women. And certainly anger management is only ever going to address one tiny bit of that problem.
If the topics discussed in this podcast have raised issues for you personally or a friend, help and advice is available 24 hours a day through the Free Phone Domestic Violence Helpline on 0808 2000 247. That's 0808 2000 247. Thank you for listening.